one another, and always with low voices and heads down. The Pathfinders follow just behind the crowd, pushing closer to the prisoners as they passed Netherguard patrols, which had seemed to increase now that they'd captured her team. And the others cracked and betrayed them, telling the Netherguards there were more of them in the mountain. Carson banished the thought. No Pathfinder would ever give up his team. That principle was drilled into them from day one of selection. Sacrifice before dishonor. 10 minutes later, Danielle turned into a long corridor lined with dark alcoves cut into the rock on either side. Each alcove had heavy metal cell bars, a single small photo cell furnished with a single toilet and several mats along the wall that served as beds. The women filed into the back and went to their knees. Another guard did a head count and slammed the door shut. Carson looked over the bars. Simple wrought iron on hinges bolted into the rocks. She and her Pathfinders could break out easily enough, their suits strong enough to bend the bars. Instead of dropping her cloak right away, Carson decided to wait, watching to see how the situation progressed. Several people arrived to help the woman and bring her food and water. To Carson's surprise, the woman from the hydroponic farm arrived a couple minutes later carrying a small case.
"Chief," Moretti said, "I need to finish treating her."
Carson nodded.
"Wait for my signal."
Carson moved slowly along the wall and stopped a few feet from Olivia and Danielle.
"We're here,"
Carson said.
"There any cameras? Monitoring?"
Both women's eyes went wide. Olivia turned to the sound of the voice, eyes darting around through the empty space.
"See?"
Olivia said to Danielle.
"I told you I wasn't crazy."
Danielle raised a hand and called out to the rest of the women in the cell.
"Screen!"
The prisoners went to the bars. One dug out a small mirror from the dirt floor and used it to look down the hallways. Danielle touched the farmer's arm.
"Tell the girls they're about to get a shock, but to keep their cool."
Olivia nodded and moved away.
"Don't suppose you brought something to eat?"
Danielle nudged a plate of cold potatoes away from her.
"Potatoes, onions, and avocado oil for years. Sometimes it's onions and potatoes and chunks of avocado on holidays."
"I've got some nutrient paste,"
Carson said.
"Oh,
yum." Danielle nodded at Olivia.
"We're good."
Carson, Moretti, and Birch all deactivated their cloaks. Those gathered gasped. More than one teared up. Carson held up her hands.
"Please, I know you're anxious for answers. I'm here to get y'all home. Stay patient."
Moretti approached, his medical kit already out. He cut off Danielle's pants leg and ran his gauntlet over an ugly bruise that covered her calf. The medic hit her neck with another hypo spray, and she relaxed a few seconds later, her shoulders dropping slightly.
"I thought I'd imagined you in the ponics room,"
Olivia said.
"But you're really here. How many ships did you bring?
We won the war against the Zaros? You must have... You're here."
Carson frowned, surprised by the woman's question. The first colony had left Earth soon after the loss of an entire fleet in deep space in a battle against an armada of the genocidal aliens' drones. The enemy force en route to Earth was enormous, but humanity managed a narrow victory against the second Zaros invasion, one that left the system's defenses shattered.
"The Zaros aren't the issue here, Olivia,"
Carson said.
"How did we win?"
Olivia's bottom lip quivered.
"We could have stayed."
"Providence," Birch said. "Providence and sacrifice."
Danielle sat up.
"You have a ship. Where is it? You need to blow the hell out of this godforsaken mountain."
"I'm all for it," Carson said. "Soon as I get everyone out."
She looked to the cell door and did some quick math as to how many colonists were in those cells.
"I feel a butt coming."
Danielle winced as Moretti gave her ankle a squeeze.
"We don't have any ships of the line. The Enduring Spirit is a colonial transport built to make a jump and coast into planetary orbit with as many people and as much equipment as she can carry. None of our ships are armed."
"But they sent Pathfinders," Danielle asked.
"We thought our job here would be a lot more search and rescue for downed shuttles, lost hikers, that sort of thing,"
Carson said.
"This is search and rescue, on a different scale."
Olivia crossed her arms.
"Terra Nova was supposed to be a paradise.
Free of the Zaros or any other species, period."
Moretti finished running his metagauntlet over Danielle's leg.
"Your fibula's fractured in three places. How's your pain level?"
The woman shrugged.
"Whatever's in your hypo's working great. Should screw up more often now that you're here."
"Yeah, well, the brace dangerously close to your femoral artery.
Moretti told her.
I'll need to do some quick surgery to fix it.
Do I have to watch? Birch knelt down opposite Moretti, holding out his hand. She took it, smiling. She looked over his armor, raising an eyebrow when she reached his left shoulder.
Is that an Abara Systems second series drone case on your shoulder?
Birch grunted.
Please, I'm a professional. This is fourth generation Gremlin chassis, but the internals are all custom.
The cover slid back and he pulled the little drone from its housing.
How'd you know that?
She grimaced as Moretti pushed another hypo against her leg. She took the drone and turned it over. It's light. The anti-grav repulsors look a bit worn, but I'm impressed.
Thanks. Always nice when a fellow droner notices my work,
Birch said, returning the drone to its cradle. Olivia moved closer to Carson. She spoke, keeping her voice low.
If it's possible, can your medic look over some of the rest of us?
I'm set up to treat acute injuries,
Moretti said as gleaming instruments popped out of housings on his gauntlet.
Little I can do for chronic conditions. Get ready for a pinch.
Carson sighed.
We'll do what we can. We came here to find you and report back when we had. Revealing ourselves like this wasn't actually part of that plan.
How many of us can you get out of here?
Olivia asked. Carson shook her head.
We didn't even know anyone would be out here when we left. Our ship is big enough for us and maybe a handful of others, but that's it. The Spirit, any of our other ships, it'll take them months to get from Terra Nova to Negev. The Nether Guard, Hale, and this Triumvirate is the problem we have to solve first.
So what, you just leave us all here? The Nether Guards will be looking for you, and if they don't find you, they'll take their frustrations out on the rest of us. Broken legs and black eyes will be the least of our worries then,
Danielle said.
Whatever we're gonna do, we're gonna need to do it fast,
Birch said. Danielle grimaced as Moretti worked.
I don't see what you three can do against the Nether Guard. They're everywhere, patrolling, night and day. I'm surprised they aren't in here right now after that mayhem in the cell block.
Carson crossed her arms.
Well, slinking out of here like some thieves in the night and leaving our team behind is not an option. We're pathfinders.
That may be, but you're still only three people against maybe a few hundred Nether Guard, Danielle said. We've been seeing new ones lately. Some of the older guards were getting a bit twitchy.
The Doughboys weren't designed for long-term use,
Birch said.
Almost all of them were retired after the war.
Still, you all have guns,
Olivia said.
That's something?
Birch shook his head.
Maybe. But we only have a finite supply of bullets. After we run dry, the odds go south very quick.
But they just have clubs and...
Olivia touched Birch's wide shoulders.
You're so strong.
Why is that?
Carson asked.
Why just clubs?
The governor said Mark Ibarra insisted they bring a few Doughboy production units with a Christophorus, Danielle said, in case we needed simple manpower in an emergency. Solar pulse fries our computers, that sort of thing.
Doughboys will do whatever you tell them. Just gotta keep them fed and stop them from playing with fire. They're hardwired not to harm humans. But whatever the Triumvirate and Hale did to alter them fouled their higher functions. They're nothing more than dumb thugs now. They wouldn't be able to use guns, even if they had them. Some of the newer guards, like the ones Hale has around him, seem a bit brighter. He keeps the dregs on us.
Jared Hale controls them. No one else?
They're primed to his voice print. Legacy programming.
Carson sighed, watching Moretti close up Daniel's wound. Birch was right. They'd lose in a stand-up fight, and waiting several months for the Enduring Spirit to come retrieve the colonists was not doable. She had no doubt the aliens would kill every single human imprisoned within the mountain before Hale could reach them. Then something Danielle had said finally registered.
Wait a second, Carson said. You said Doc.
Danielle raised an eyebrow.
What? Earlier. You said there was mayhem in the dock. That big chamber we were in, that's what you're talking about, right?
That's right.
Carson exchanged a look with her team.
There's our ship.
Danielle nodded.
We've been building it for years. We've been piecing it together ever since they brought us here. How many colonists are here?
Carson touched the hilt of her knife, feeling the crest with her fingertips.
Maybe 4,000,
Danielle said. Out of the 10,000 that came on the Christophorus? The men are in a separate block. Children and some caretakers in a third.
We might be able to put everyone on that ship,
Birch said. Does anyone know anything about how to fly it?
Carson asked. The Triumvirate tried to have us build systems from their native language and tech. We learned they're from a race called the Altari, and I don't think they're a robotic race either. Too many environmental specifications in their equipment. Their stuff was too alien, so we switched production to our technology. Had to cannibalize most of the Christophorus to make their ship. The controls are all human, but the propulsion system is theirs. It's not anti-grav, not solid-state rocketry. Some kind of Alcubierre drive. We lost hundreds to the mines, digging out some kind of crystal before they swapped us out with the Doughboys.
How close is it to being finished?
Carson asked.
They're almost done,
Olivia said.
I trade messages with one of the electrical engineers in the men's cell block. The workload slowed a bit. Lots of fine-tuning, and they've been testing the engines since last week. Damn things give us the weirdest headaches. Some sort of variation on anti-grav technology. But they keep that kind of stuff strictly compartmentalized. A lot of the engineers are kept on 24-hour lockdown.
They're waiting for us to arrive, Birch said. The timing can't be a coincidence.
Do you have any idea where these Altari are?
Danielle shrugged. We saw them going to the ship a few months ago. Haven't seen them since. Jared is the only one we ever see, and they keep him on a pretty short leash. We set up an industrial accident a year ago to kill him. Thought we got him, but then he showed up in that damn ugly suit of his.
His voice wasn't damaged, Olivia said, which is a shame. That's how he keeps the Netherguard in line.
So if we could get a sample of Jared's voice, Carson said.
Birch tapped his forearm screen, and the gremlin floated up from its housing. It hovered in the middle of the group. When a red light changed to green, a familiar voice said,
This is your second offense. Apparently your punishment for your first non-compliance was insufficient.
Danielle pushed herself away from the drone, backing up against the rough stone wall of the alcove.
Holy crap.
Carson shot Birch a questioning look. He shrugged.
The drones keep a half hour's worth of data in their buffers. I flagged his voice files as important. Thought it might come in handy if he could control some of the drones.
Can you copy his voice completely? Carson asked.
I have a limited sample. I could synthesize a few words and phrases with what I've got, but I'm no Popoff, he said. She could create an algorithm to fill in the gaps.
But if you got more of his voice, could you replicate it perfectly? Carson asked.
Birch frowned.
I can't guarantee it would work. Not my specialty.
What do you need, a code monkey? Danielle asked.
Cynthia, she waved to a painfully thin woman. She's done programming in my section for years. I know she's a pro because the Doughboys haven't yet to break her leg for screwing up.
So now what? Olivia asked.
What do you mean? Carson asked.
Olivia shrugged.
You mentioned getting a sample of Jared's voice. What was your plan when you got it?
The public address system, Carson said. If we can get access to it, then we can create some confusion. Maybe even force the Netherguard to attack the ship. Let the Triumvirate feel what it's like to be up to their necks in homicidal doughboys.
Jared's control room, Danielle said. It's not in the ship, but built into the dome wall, where he can look over the entire complex. He made all his pronouncements from there before his accident.
Getting inside shouldn't be too hard, Birch said. Getting his voice print is something else.
Danielle's face scrunched up in pain.
You haven't seen the control room. It was one of the first things we built, and there's Altari tech in place. But you could hack into the underlying systems, which I installed. I don't think we have time for me to explain how I jury-rigged parts from 8 different computer cores together to make the damn thing work. I need to go with you,
she hissed through her teeth as Moretti applied sutures to her leg.
You can barely walk,
Moretti said, placing 6 more staples.
I give you any more painkillers and you'll start floating.
She blew out a pained breath.
I can do it.
I'll carry her, Birch said.
He normally leaves his office to do rounds at the beginning of each shift, Olivia said. That's your best chance.
Carson knelt down and drew an oval in the sand.
Okay, here's the plan.
This is a terrible idea.
Danielle said, grimacing as Birch bent over and picked her up off the floor. Birch straightened, holding the woman in both arms, one arm around her back, one under her legs. In his power armor, she weighed next to nothing.
It'll work.
You hope it works? Ouch! I should really make these things a little more comfortable.
Carson stepped up and adjusted Birch's cloak over the woman.
They're not made for comfort. They're made to keep you alive.
Birch adjusted his hold on Danielle.
It'll work.
She looked down at Moretti. What about you? Do you think it'll work? The medic looked up from his kit and shrugged.
A decent plan, violently executed, is better than the perfect plan, ready after the opportunity's gone. You tech junkies say you can do it. I hope you deliver. There's been worse decision-making on display.
Carson worked her jaw, resisting the urge to correct his attitude. She had yet to figure out where his disdain for her came from, but he hadn't done anything so overt that it required her to reprimand him. She made a note to address the issue once they were back on board the Spirit.
Worse? Danielle asked, wrapping her arm around Birch's plating. Worse than what? Worse than attacking Nethergard with sticks and stones?
We have sticks? Carson asked.
No one told me we had sticks.
Danielle gave a nervous laugh.
Oh, that makes me feel a whole lot better.
It's not perfect, Carson said. I'll admit that, but it's all we've got. You said you're tired of living as a prisoner? Well, if you want to get home, this is the way we do it.
I didn't say I wasn't going to do it. I just wish we had a better option.
Carson chuckled.
Trust me, so do I.
She turned to Olivia.
Now, you're clear on your part?
Olivia frowned.
Oh, I'm clear on it. But I'm in the same boat as Danielle.
You're asking a lot of us for having just met you. How confident are you that you and your team can pull this off? For that matter, how confident are you that you can even breach his systems? She asked Danielle. How many years has it been since you've seen those components?
Danielle shifted nervously in Birch's arms.
Like riding a bike. Old or new components, they all do the same thing.
Olivia turned to Carson, eyebrow raised as if to reiterate her question.
I have 100% confidence in my team, Carson said. They're some of the most skilled and best qualified warfighters I've ever served with. We will get you home, I promise.
Olivia held Carson's gaze for a moment, then nodded.
I hope so. I don't like the idea of throwing friends into the meat grinder.
Neither do I, Carson said.
Okay, we're getting close to shift change, Danielle said. Might want to get everyone on the same page.
I'll handle that, Olivia said, stepping away from the group. Moretti held out a headset for Danielle.
So you can hear us. I still wouldn't talk unless it was absolutely necessary. Your audio won't be secured or confined to the IR like ours will be.
Danielle slipped on the headset, adjusting it over her ears.
Can you hear me?
Moretti nodded. Carson stepped up to Birch and adjusted his cloak collar. After adjusting the field settings, she stepped back and nodded.
Okay, try it out.
Birch activated his cloak and he disappeared. Danielle's feet dangled in midair. Carson laughed.
Well, if the nether guards don't trigger on two shoes floating around, we should be okay. Here, let me adjust it again.
Chuckwagon.
The woman with the mirror pulled back from the bars and stashed the bit of polished metal beneath a rock.
Guards are coming, Danielle said.
Birch set her down and she slipped out from beneath his cloak. She joined the huddle of prisoners by the gate, walking with an exaggerated limp. Carson and Moretti activated their camo and disappeared. The guard force had increased to four doughboys, a pair at the fore and another pair in the rear. The Pathfinders followed the group, staying well behind the Nether Guard. As soon as they entered the main chamber, Carson knew she'd underestimated the Nether Guard security. There were patrols at the entrances to all of the workspaces and every 10 meters on the catwalks above. Near the top of the chamber, she spotted Hale's office, a 20-meter section cut out of the sheer rock face lined with opaque glass. Four guards stood on a platform separating the office's double metal doors and the lift a couple meters away.
We're gonna have to go airborne sooner than I thought,
Carson said, her voice muffled by her helmet, but words transmitted through the IR links between the Pathfinders.
Can't stay in the air too long, Moretti said. Power packs will run down quick.
I know.
Carson took a deep breath, wondering if they should just call it off. Olivia and her people were already spreading out through the honeycomb of workspaces, relieving colonists from the previous shift.
Get set,
Carson pointed at Danielle.
Should have our distraction in...
Get away from me, you son of a bitch!
Olivia backed away from one of the Nether Guards. A woman in the crowd hurled a stone, and it smacked off the Nether Guard's face, knocking it back a step. Its partner stepped forward, raising its club.
No hurt!
The Nether Guard commanded, its voice mechanical and gruff.
Who threw? Punish all! Punish all!
Another rock sailed out of the group. This time the Nether Guard was ready for it. The doughboy swung its club like a bat and knocked the rock high into the air. In the excitement, Danielle slipped out of the side of the group and beneath Birch's camo cloak. The guard stepped forward, pointing its long claw-like fingers at the crowd.
All punish!
Go to hell!
Olivia shouted, throwing a third rock. Carson shook her head.
Damn it, let's get moving.
They jogged toward Jared's office, keeping close to the wall and slowing as more Netherguard ran toward the disturbance.
Up!
Carson jumped onto a wall just below one of the catwalks spanning the cavern and pulled herself to the top. Moretti joined her a second later. They reached down and scrambled the camo pattern on their hands, making them visible. Birch grabbed their hands and they hoisted him up, a struggle even with his suit's added strength. They repeated the maneuver and got onto the catwalk.
I'm so glad I can't see anything right now,
Danielle said from beneath Birch's camo cloak. The angry crowd below grew as more and more people formed up around Olivia, hurling rocks and insults at the guards. Several patrols had left the catwalks, jumping over the rails to join their companions on the ground. With over 36 Nether guards converging on the disturbance, Carson knew the small pocket of human resistance wouldn't last long if the guards decided to take action. They reached the platform outside Hale's office. Two guards with the horned helmets standing on either side of the door were either unaware of the situation below or simply did not care, both standing with their clubs on the ground staring straight ahead.
Damn things give me the creeps,
Moretti said. Carson turned towards Birch's outline.
I thought you said Jared normally responds to disturbances.
He does, Danielle whispered. I swear he enjoys giving out the punishment. Below, someone screamed. One of the Nether guards had a hold of a colonist and was pulling them away from the group by their arm. Several of the colonists rushed forward, beating at the Nether guard with makeshift clubs made from bedposts from the cells, though their blows didn't seem to have any effect. The Nether guard pushed several away with one sweep of his arm, knocking them to the ground even as he held the other one up in one hand. With a quick jerk, it shook the woman hard, her head whipping violently back and forth. Then it flung her against a wall. Carson's heart ached. People were dying for her plan, and it was not working. She turned back to the door and brought her carbine up.
We can't wait forever.
Just then, the door opened. Jared Hale stepped out. His pale white skin was a stark contrast to the matte black segmented armor he wore. This close, Carson could see the cables snaking down from the back of his skull to a mechanical rig that fit over his shoulders and down his back. His clean-shaven face seemed calm, as if undisturbed by what was going on below. He stepped to the rail and looked down, shaking his head.
Will they never learn?
With me.
Jared motioned to the two Nether guards and headed for the lift doors. There was enough space on the platform that the Pathfinders could move to one side and allow Jared and the two guards to pass without having to hang off the edge. The lift doors closed and they watched as the capsule descended through the clear tube to the floor of the chamber.
Move,
Carson said. Birch set Danielle down just outside the double metal doors of Hale's office. The woman seemed to materialize out of thin air as she stepped from Birch's arms. Birch jabbed his knife blade beneath a control panel and wrenched the metal plate open with a twist. Danielle reached inside and there was a snap from the doorframe. Birch lugged the door open just enough for them to get through.
Inside,
Carson said, allowing the woman and her two pathfinders to enter first. She took one last look behind her, then stepped in and closed the door with a quick pull. Danielle stopped a few feet inside the door.
He's redecorated.
The office was lined with large plexiglass panels covered in handwritten text and rows of numbers. An elevated workstation took up the middle of the room, the displays high so a person could work on them while standing. Crystalline panels covered the computer banks, and alien text floated over small ovals arrayed in a spiral pattern. Banks of holoscreens lined the top of the windows, their images panning around as drone footage came in. At the back of the room were two cylinders almost 9 feet tall, both embedded in a humming block of machinery. Inside one was an incomplete nether guard. Needle-thin mechanical arms spun skin and muscle over the exposed skeleton. The body was slowly coming into being, like it was decaying in reverse. Carson swallowed hard. Seeing how the constructs were made filled her with revulsion. In the other cylinder, a complete doughboy stood with its eyes shut, breathing very slowly.
Should have smashed the damn things when we learned we had them, Danielle said.
Get to it.
Carson took her carbine off her back and walked around the workstation. Danielle opened a panel at the bottom of a computer bank and reached inside. As Carson moved around the desk, she noticed a small framed picture between the stations. She turned it around. Both Hale brothers stood side by side in the photo. Ken Hale in his Strike Marine uniform, Jared in Army Greens. Both had Second Lieutenant Gold Bar rank on their shoulders. Carson knew the two were twins, but had never noticed how much they looked like each other.
We are our choices,
Moretti said.
Good or bad. Ken Hale helped win the war, won the peace with the rest of the galaxy, created the Pathfinders, led us to Terra Nova. Jared betrayed the first colonists and is an abomination.
Sentimentality doesn't strike me as the trait of tyrants, Carson tapped the picture frame. They're twins. Nature and nurture weren't all that different from them until when? Jared encountered the aliens? What had the triumvirate done to him to keep him in line?
I think I heard something about Ken Hale.
Danielle pulled two wires out from beneath the workstation and spliced them together. Wasn't he the one that rescued Mark Ybarra on Earth? Something about negotiating with the Toth before they attacked us?
There's a lot you've missed, Carson said.
Jared was just another civil engineer when we first got here, Danielle said. First I heard of him was when he got married.
Married? Carson asked. They were one of the first couples to get hitched on Terra Nova, and had one of the first babies. It was a big deal for us. Meant we were really getting settled, had a future ahead of us.
Then he goes and destroys everything we built.
What happened to his family? Birch asked.
Not sure. Danielle held up a data line to Birch and he plugged it into his gremlin. Lost a lot of people when Jared attacked New Jefferson. Maybe they died then. No one's seen them.
Are you into the system yet?
Carson asked. Birch's fingers danced over his forearm screen. He looked at the holo displays and smiled as the pictures wobbled up and down.
I've got the drones, Birch said.
Danielle pulled Birch's arm down and tapped on his screen.
And now we've got the PA system, she said.
Don't have his voice, though, Carson said. Birch, find him. Have a drone get close enough to pull audio. If he's talking, we can fill in the gaps we need.
On it, Birch said.
Moretti went to an open crate next to the Doughboy constructor and picked up a thick notebook. He flipped through the pages and frowned.
Not medical, he said. Thought he'd have kept records of how he altered the Doughboys. Bunch of engineering diagrams with his shorthand. Worthless.
He tossed it back into the crate. Those diagrams look like Fibonacci spirals. Danielle's head popped up from the workstation.
They do,
Moretti said. Those are the Altari engines. Danielle looked at the crate and licked her lips. She shook her head quickly and went back to work. Just because it doesn't eat and breathe doesn't mean it's worthless, Sawbones.
I'm almost offended, the medic said. Almost. Found Jared,
Birch said. Two of the holoscreens switched to the catwalks, showing them different angles as Jared walked along, his personal guard close to him. One of the drones shifted to one side, and Carson saw Jared's destination. He was heading straight for them.
Damn it!
Carson touched her camo cloak, thinking of options. She'd planned on the riot lasting a good deal longer.
We just need his voice. Moretti on the door with me.
Jared's bodyguards peeled off and returned to their original position as the Overlord walked back to his office, his face dark. Carson drew her knife and jammed it between the door and the frame. Moretti braced himself against it. Outside, Hale almost walked into the door. He mumbled and held his palm up to the sensor on the outside control panel. Unseen mechanisms whined and clicked, but the door did not open. Jared slammed his fist into the door. Moretti lifted his carbine, aiming it through the door at Jared.
Want me to?
No, Carson told him. There's no way of telling how the Nether Guards will react if he dies. Hale pounded on the door again, shouting muffled curses. He went to the window and punched it, sending a spiderweb of cracks through the glass. Carson looked back over her shoulder.
Birch, you ready for phase two? Move the drones, giving us the video feed in closer.
Birch tapped his gauntlet, and one of the holoscreens changed to a grid with letters and consonant blends on them. A little more than half were shaded in.
Program's up and running.
The window cracked further as Jared hit it again.
Mike.
Carson waved at the gremlin. Birch pointed at her, and the drone zipped over.
You're on in 5, 4, 3.
Birch finished the countdown with his fingers. Carson took a deep breath and said,
Give me your weapons.
Outside, one of the video drones played her words through its speakers. The voice was not hers, but Jared's. The pounding on the glass stopped as the two Nether Guards stepped up and held out their clubs to Jared. Jared shook his head, pushing the clubs away.
No, what are you doing? I don't want your damn staffs.
On the screen, more of the grid squares filled in.
Get him to say a word with ST in it, Danielle said. Sink, store, whatever.
The Nether Guard pulled their weapons back and stood still, waiting for the next command.
Throw your weapons over the railing,
Carson said, and Jared's voice came out of the drone.
No, cancel command!
Jared grabbed one of the Nether Guard by the wrists before it could comply. The other tossed his weapon over his shoulder. There was a thump and a growl of pain from a guard on the ground level.
Punch each other.
Carson tossed her hands up. One of the guards landed a haymaker that sent the other to the ground.
Stand down! Stand down!
Jared pulled the standing guard back before he could hurt the other some more. Jared's face snapped up, and he looked straight at the drone that had given the commands. He pointed at the drone, and the armor around his wrist glowed bright.
Guards, throw me to the floor!
Carson bit off a curse as a flash of light came through the window and the drone footage cut off.
Bring in the other one, Birch asked.
Do we have what we need? Carson asked. On the grid, only a few boxes remained unchecked.
Think we can get the job done, Birch said. Just have to pick our words carefully.
Here, Carson pushed the gremlin back towards Birch. The door groaned as Jared's nether guards tried to pry it open. Machinery in the doorframe groaned and Carson heard Jared shouting commands through the metal. She grabbed her knife and felt tension through the handle. The door lurched open and her blade snapped out of the frame. A nether guard fell through the door. Carson rammed her knife through its temple and it dropped like a rock. The second stumbled into the room and ran into Birch. The Pathfinder clamped his hands against the side of its head and snapped the neck with a crack of a bow breaking. Carson swung her carbine up and leveled it at Jared's face. Jared froze, arms held out low to his sides. One of his eyes twitched and Carson saw thin wires moving just beneath his skin. The glowing metal around one wrist died down. In a voice more calm than she felt, Carson said,
I want you to be very, very still. I'm gonna ask you a couple of questions. I want you to think long and hard about your answers, because they will determine whether or not I put a bullet through your skull.
Jared gave an almost imperceptible nod and remained silent.
Where are my people? Are they alive?
Jared nodded slowly. Where are they?
Yeah. You have to stop them,
Jared said. His lips pulled back, racked with pain.
My team, the colonists, they're what's important, Carson said. You want to make amends for what you've done, you better start now.
Jared looked over his shoulder to the starship.
You don't understand. You don't understand what's happening here, what they want, what they can do.
Sounds like you're stalling.
Carson put pressure on her trigger.
They're reaching for me,
Hale said, cocking his head slightly.
I don't have much time.
Then tell me where my people are.
Hale held her gaze for several seconds without speaking. His eyes darted back and forth as if he was checking for something. Then he mouthed,
In the ship. Sublevel 1. 1-8-3-8-8.
Carson frowned, watching his lips as he mouthed the words again. She nodded, understanding. The next words he spoke were barely a whisper.
Tell Ken. Tell my brother. Clouseau would never have gotten caught.
Then his once concerned and anxious face twisted into one of rage and hatred, and he slammed a fist against the doorframe.
Unit Gamma 9 activate! I'll kill you myself! All will serve the true rulers, or they will be destroyed!
Carson lowered her muzzle and shot Jared in the chest. The plate fragmented, and he backpedaled. She shot him again. The hit spun him around and pitched him to the deck face first.
Who was he talking about?
Moretti asked.
Gamma?
There was a crash as the complete doughboy inside the assembler burst through the cylinder. Moretti turned around and took a punch to the jaw that knocked him off balance. The doughboy slammed a hand onto the medic's shoulder and chucked him into Birch. The two pathfinders went down in a tangle of limbs. Carson brought her carbine around, but the workstation was between her and the new threat. One errant bullet could wreck the entire setup and ruin their plans to free the prisoners. Danielle scrambled aside as the doughboy raised a foot and stomped down. She rolled out of the way as its heel struck the deck, leaving a dent in the metal. Carson wrenched her knife out of the dead nether guard's skull and hurled it at the gamma. The doughboy raised an arm and the blade sank into its forearm. Blood burbled out of the wound. The doughboy looked at the knife, then at Carson, and growled at her.
Well, shit, Carson said.
The gamma thundered towards her, faster than anything that size should have ever managed. She brought her carbine up and had it slapped out of her hands. She ducked a punch that would have knocked her head clean off and brought an arm up to ward off the next swing. Instead, the gamma grabbed her by the wrist and flung her into a window. Carson went flying out of the control room as the glass shattered. She tumbled over the deck and managed to get a hand up to grab a railing as her legs flopped over the edge. The doughboy jumped out of the broken window and charged at her. Carson saw the rage in its face and realized she was about to die. There was a snap of a carbine, and blood burst out of the doughboy's chest. It slowed and looked down at the wound. Another shot ripped through its stomach, and it hunched over. The construct looked up at Carson, blood gushing over its lips.
Die!
It took a step toward her, and its head exploded. Carson pulled herself back onto the platform. In the broken window, Danielle held a carbine, smoke wafting from the barrel. Carson waved her back into the control room and got to her feet, still dizzy from the sudden ride through the window. She brushed glass out of her badly torn camo cloak. She looked over to where Jared had fallen, but he was gone. An alarm sounded, its two-tone wail echoing through the cavern. The chimes were followed by a mechanical voice, the same voice they'd heard in the chamber before. All prisoners are ordered to stand down and return to their cells. This is a no-fail lockdown. You are in violation. Carson stepped over the dead nether guard and re-entered the command center. Moretti helped Birch back onto his feet.
Where the hell is sub-level one? Carson asked Danielle. What's a no-fail lockdown?
Sub-level one? That's in the ship. Danielle hopped into the control station and gingerly tapped at the alien controls. A no-fail means anyone not in their cell in 5 minutes will be killed on sight.
We have...
Carson lost her balance and grabbed onto the station to keep her balance.
We still have access to the PA system?
That we do. Danielle gave the workstation a quick pat. Carson closed her eyes, waiting for the room to stop spinning.
Kill that other voice. Lock Jared out of the PA. Can you do that?
Carson said. Danielle gave her a thumbs up.
Mike, Carson said. Give me the mic again.
The gremlin bobbed up and down in front of her.
Cancel lockdown,
Carson said, and her words boomed through the chamber in Jared's voice.
All units report to the ship. A prisoner in violation has broken into the ship's engine node. Get into the engines and detain him for judgment. Now, the Triumvirate commands it.
On the chamber floor, the nether guards surrounding the prisoner stopped, straightening as they received their instructions. After a moment, they turned, facing the large, disc-shaped ship in the center of the chamber, then started advancing towards it.
Faster!
Carson shouted. The nether guards broke into a full sprint, all converging on the far side of the ship. They converged on large, bulbous outcroppings on one side of the disc and started clawing their way up the sides of the spacecraft. They pounded fists, clubs, and feet into the outer shell of the ship, damaging the metal. Carson pushed the gremlin away.
Birch, find us another way into that ship.
One of the screens panned to one side and stopped over a gap in the unfinished hull beneath a catwalk.
That's our way in, Carson said.
A deep reverberation carried through the floor. Moretti tapped a foot to the floor.
Can't be an earthquake, the medic said.
The engines. Danielle looked up from the controls. I think they're getting ready to leave.
Hold down the fort.
Carson picked up her carbine and ran for the door.
Let's go!
Chapter 16. Jared's armor carried him forward, his legs refusing to move by his will. Every breath sent stabs of pain through his chest. He'd come to inside the ship. His armor, his mobile prison, had removed him from the Pathfinder while she tangled with his nether guard.
I can't believe she shot me,
he thought.
Twice!
The iris to the Triumvirate's quarters opened and the armor carried him on stiff legs. The Emperor turned away from his data field, lava-red eyes glowing beneath the metal sculpture of his face.
Failure!
The prince pushed a hand at Jared and his armor toppled over. Control returned to Jared's body and the pain in his chest grew even worse. Blood seeped through his lips and spattered on the deck as he coughed.
The plan was yours, my prince,
the Emperor said.
You assured us you could capture the human's vessel, the technology we need.
My attack was perfect.
The prince advanced on Jared, the talons on his mechanical legs stabbing into the deck and ripping out small divots as he moved.
His creatures failed, not me.
The prince grabbed Jared by the throat and lifted him into the air. Claw tips dug into the mesh on his neck, working towards the arteries beneath.
Enough,
the Emperor said.
I'll not have you damage him any further.
The prince gently lowered Jared to the ground, then ran two claws down his face, leaving thin cuts that beaded with blood.
Masters,
Jared said.
There are human operatives here. More than we thought.
And you didn't think to tell us there would be more?
The Emperor asked.
I've never encountered these Pathfinders before,
Jared said.
I
handled the interrogation,
the Archduke said. His painfully thin chassis stalked toward the Emperor like a scarecrow suddenly given life.
They denied anyone else was with him. I didn't press the issue.
as I was far more interested in examining the procedural data.
Your focus blinded you to the other threats, the Emperor said. This is not the first time you've made this mistake.
It doesn't matter, the Archduke snapped over long fingers in the air. We need this ship and nothing else. Our Empire awaits to dally here for the chance of something useful.
The Crucible Gates would change the balance of power forever, the Prince said. Our reconquest could be done in months. Thousands of years of planning our return, and the Crucible Gates would guarantee our victory.
No.
The Emperor rose up, his ornate form standing head and shoulders over the others.
We bide our time here for the keys to the procedural bodies. To return to our empire in this form, there will be resistance. They would see us as the abominations that overthrew us. You do have it, don't you, Archduke?
The Duke bent his head. I have what I need. We will be whole. In time.
And it will take time to build the Crucible, will it not?
The Emperor asked Jared.
Yes, Master.
Jared kept his answer simple, not wanting to goad them into a rush if he gave a short time frame.
The planet and the humans on it aren't going anywhere,
the Emperor said.
Let us return to those loyal to us, and return at the vanguard of a full Ultari fleet. The other Hale will surrender his people and their technology, or we will take what we need from their ashes. Come, I tire of our prison.
The Emperor pressed his hand to a control panel, and Jared felt the engines come to life.
Open the dome,
the Emperor said to the Prince.
Deactivate the force field once we're clear.
Master!
Jared tried to take a step forward, but his armor locked around his body.
The slaves! If you drop the force field, they'll lose their air. They'll die.
You think I've been removed from my body so long I forgot what it is to breathe?
The Emperor asked.
They will die. A message to your brother. We show the limits to our patience and mercy, and it will make him more pliant when we return for him.
Carson ran down a walkway inside the alien ship. The deck and bulkheads were of human design, ripped out of the Christophorus and repurposed to suit the Triumvirate's designs. Hasty welds marred the metals, and the corridor was half again as wide as what Carson was used to on a human ship. The ceiling had a slight arch, and light played against the ivory-colored metal like it was reflecting from a pool. The walkway she and her two pathfinders were on was bolted to the outside of a smaller dome structure within the larger outer hull. The framework for the rest of the ship was present, extending to the hull like a bare skeleton. Behind them, the engines, a mass of green glowing tubes that made no sense to her, thrummed with energy. A small group of Nether Guards rounded a corner and beat the handles of their clubs against the railings when they saw the Pathfinders. Carson aimed carefully and took the nearest one in the forehead. The others went down to precise shots from Birch and Moretti. She glanced at the ammo counter on the back of her carbine and winced. Every shot had to count. Grunts and howls echoed through the ship as her team stepped over one of the bodies, bright green blood staining their boots. All the Nether Guard they'd encountered within the ship had been just as aggressive and hostile as usual, but those that had broken through the outer hull remained transfixed on making their way to the engine room. When the two groups met, confusion reigned, a circumstance that Carson appreciated, as there were far more altered doughboys than she had bullets. Birch pointed ahead to a small depression on the inner hull.
Another 100 feet,
he said. Birch and Moretti followed, and soon they arrived at a locked door with no markings. Carson tested the handle. Locked.
Reach it.
Birch pulled a length of burn cord from a pouch. The device could burn through the outer hull of a battleship in a few seconds. The repurposed material from a colony ship would melt like butter and send off a cloud of toxic gas from the vaporized metal.
We're suited. No danger to us. But what about West and the others?
Carson asked.
We burn or blow the door and it could kill them. I doubt Jared let them stay in their armor.
The deck plating rattled as a tremor crept up the ship from the engines.
We're running out of time for subtlety, Birch said.
Pinscope, Moretti said. Take us 5 seconds to see what's on the other side.
On it.
Carson took a small cylinder off her belt and pressed it toward the edge of the door. The door snapped open and another guard loomed over her, club already swinging for her head. Moretti yanked her back and she saw spikes on the tip of the doughboy's weapon blur across her vision. The club whacked into the frame and embedded into the metal. Birch tackled the nether guard and landed on top of his foe. Birch threw a short punch that the doughboy deflected. The two grappled, the nether guard clawing at his visor. Inside the room were egg-shaped pods embedded in the walls. A pair of nether guard charged at her, light glinting off their clubs. Carson fired from the hip and hit one of the attackers in the ankle, blowing the foot clean off. It pitched forward but kept crawling toward her. She got up and hesitated as she brought her carbine to bear on the other, worried that if she missed, a stray round might puncture one of the pods. Without knowing which parts contained her team, she didn't want to take the risk of accidentally hitting one. Carson shouted a challenge, dropped her carbine, and charged the oncoming nether guard. She pulled her tactical blade from its sheath, then dropped to her knees and slid across the metal floor, arching her head back, narrowly missing the nether guard's club. The blade bit into the doughboy's thigh, tearing flesh as Carson slid past. The nether guard screamed in pain and let the club go. It shot out and struck Moretti in the sternum, doubling him over. The doughboy twisted and clawed at Carson's back, its talons raking the armor between her shoulder blades. She hopped back to her feet, spinning the knife in her hand. Holding it blade down, Carson leaned forward, knees slightly bent, arms held in front of her, ready to parry the alien's attack. It turned to face her, bright green blood spurting from the wound on its side, flowing freely through the alien's fingers. It looked from her to the wound, then back again as if it didn't understand what had happened.
"Not so bad without your stick, are you?"
Carson asked it. It snarled and took a step toward her. Carson grinned behind her visor.
"Let's finish this."
The nether guard lashed out, but its movements were slow. Carson easily dodged the blow, bringing her knife slicing through the alien's arm. She sidestepped to the right, twisting around behind it. She grabbed the top of the skull with her free hand and yanked the head to one side and then cut the blade along the side of the nether guard's neck, severing the arteries. Forgetting the power of her suit, Carson ripped the alien's head free of its shoulders and the body collapsed to the floor. Carson heard muffled curses from behind. Moretti lay against the bulkhead, arms clutched to his stomach. Birch rode on the other nether guard's back, one arm wrapped around its throat. The nether guard backed up and rammed Birch into the wall. It took a step away from the wall and swung an elbow back, and Birch released his hold. Birch ducked under the blow and jumped up to grab the nether guard by the neck again. Birch tucked his foe's head against his shoulder, and Birch lifted his feet off the deck and used the weight of his entire body and suit to pull the doughboy's head straight down. Birch landed on the deck, and the nether guard's neck snapped against his shoulder. In the middle of the room, the nether guard she'd shot in the leg lay dead, its skull blown open. Birch shoved the body off and went to Moretti.
"You okay?"
"Damn things hit hard,"
Moretti grunted.
"Why didn't you just shoot that one?"
He got up and waved at the doughboy with a broken neck.
"Because I'm out of ammo,"
Birch said. Carson went to one of the eggshells. An oval-shaped panel with Ultari runes didn't offer any clues as to how to open them. Carson cupped her hands to the side of her eyes and tried to look into one of the shells. Nothing.
"Don't overcomplicate this."
Moretti grabbed a dead nether guard by the wrist and brought its palm up to the panel. A shell melted away, revealing an empty T-board with restraints. Carson dragged another corpse to the other side of the wall and opened an eggshell. West looked up groggily as the outer layer of his cell vanished.
"West!"
Carson snapped the restraints on his wrists and caught the sergeant as he fell forward.
"Chief, good to see you again."
He grimaced as he stepped onto the floor, favoring one leg. His left eye was swollen shut, his skin purple and bruised. Blood from a cut on his cheek had dried in a series of lines drawn across his face. His lip was split in two places. He was stripped down to the thermal layer of his armor, which offered little more than modesty for protection. He looked over the dead nether guard and out the door to open space beyond.
"You've been busy,"
West said.
"Moretti,"
Carson said, moving out of the way. The medic helped Birch to the floor and moved to assess West.
"Damn, Sarge, they really did a number on you,"
West coughed.
"Nunez and Popoff."
Carson turned and saw Birch had already opened their pods. Nunez kicked a doughboy and cursed as his bare foot struck its armor.
"I hate these things,"
Nunez said.
"Hate them so much!"
"Are you okay?"
Moretti asked a green-faced Popoff. She lurched forward and threw up all over the floor. Popoff spit, then looked up, her sweat-soaked hair hanging over her face.
Well, we feel so much better now."
The room rocked slightly, and Nunez grabbed onto Birch's shoulder.
"We hanging around for some reason?"
Nunez asked.
We're near the keel of the ship.
Birch tapped his gauntlet screen.
There's a gap between the construction scaffolding and the ground.
They got something from me,
Popoff said.
I don't know what exactly, but it was important to them. And our carbines.
She shook her head.
They're not going to kill them.
We get off this bucket and get back to the colonists, Carson said. Saving them is more important than trying to stop the triumvirate.
She pointed to the open door.
This fight's just beginning. Let's go.
Jared felt the ship lurch up. The Altari anti-gravity engines carried lift unevenly, and the bridge wobbled from port to starboard. The triumvirate didn't speak. Each kept to their stations and made corrections to their ascent without the need to coordinate. In the data tank, he saw the Nether Guard assaulting the engines, blown away like leaves before a gale. More tumbled off the hull to their deaths. He didn't care. They were abominations. Not the doughboys he'd led during the wars on Earth so long ago. Overhead, the mountainside broke away and slid down as mining charges planted over the course of years were finally detonated. Jared heard the rumble of the landslide in the bridge. Part of him felt a sense of awe or accomplishment. Years of effort had finally come to fruition, even though he'd been used to enslave his people to make it happen. A shower of rock slag pelted the ship. The ship rose higher, and the upper hull passed through the force field and broken earth poured over the edge of the craft like rain over eaves.
Not yet, he thought. They won't do it yet. The decompression will send the ship out of control.
Jared moved toward the command dais.
Truly, he said, your greatness knows no limit.
The Duke clawed at him in annoyance. Jared watched as data streamed across their screens and waited for the Duke to reach for a small set of four buttons on the bottom of his workstation. Jared knew the controls as well as they did. After all, he'd built this bridge to their specifications. The Prince touched a lever and Jared felt the ship accelerate upwards. The Duke reached for the controls that would drop the force field and vent the chamber's atmosphere. Jared rammed a fist into the panel and smashed the bottom corner, obliterating the controls. There was a flash of red light and a sting of pain in his chest. The Emperor was on his feet, glowing arm leveled at Jared. Jared tried to speak, but nothing came out. He looked down and found a neat hole the size of a fist, clean through his armor. He smelled incinerated blood and looked back up at the triumvirate. He fell to his knees, managed to smile, and collapsed. His thoughts drifted to Terra Nova, to what might have been, as his mind slipped away. Carson stared up at the pale pink Negev sky through the gap in the chamber ceiling. The center of the room was a disaster of mangled scaffolding and dead netherguard. Boulders slipped through the force field and shattered against the detritus.
Well, shit,
Nunez said.
We need to contact the Valiant, Carson said. Get word back to Terra Nova.
Carson!
Danielle ran over, a man with a thin beard and the gremlin trailing behind her.
You did it! We're free! Finally free!
She wiped a tear from her eyes.
I'm Paulson,
the man said.
I'm in charge of the men's cell block. No, just the men now, I guess. I heard you brought a ship.
Across the chamber, men and women crept out of their cells. Carson heard people calling for husbands and wives, saw parents searching for their children.
We've a small ship, Carson said. Very small. Won't be enough to get everyone out in one go.
There's another one, ma'am, West said. The Orfreda. She's not in bad shape. Couple engineers and some heavy equipment from the Enduring Spirit, and she could be back in action.
If it gets us home,
Danielle said.
I don't have a magic wand,
Carson said to the two former prisoners.
But Terra Nova's waiting for you. Just give me some time.
She looked up at the hole in the dome and realized her work on Negev was just getting started.
I'm telling you, Lincoln,
Greer said from Valiant's pilot seat.
Standish's Reserve is the best whiskey you'll ever sip.
The co-pilot shook his head.
And I'm telling you that the McDougal's is superior. That smoky finish sets it apart.
You're a lightweight.
Greer glanced at a blip on a display screen, then leaned to one side of the cockpit to look through the windows below her feet and down to Negev. She shrugged her shoulders.
Two shots and you're asleep at the bar. You can't drink enough to fully appreciate the nuance that comes with enough of the Standish's reserve.
I heard this is the exact argument that led to Standish and McDougal's company splitting up.
Lincoln said,
Standish put a good chunk of his fortune into sponsoring this expedition with the one stipulation that not one drop of McDougal's be aboard any of the ships when we came over.
Lincoln smirked.
The inspectors sure were thorough, Greer said a little too loudly and with odd inflection. She glanced back toward the crew compartment, then whispered,
You didn't.
Lincoln giggled like a schoolgirl.
They never check the titanium cladding spars in the mules, he said. I may have a bottle or seven hidden in one of the slicks back on the Spirit.
I emptied my entire bank account on high-end booze before we left, Greer said. Got it packed away in a slick on the Standish.
Seemed appropriate. You planning on opening a distillery or something?
Maybe.
You're a smart man.
You know, centuries ago in the Old West, who the richest people were? Miners and bartenders, and one generally lived longer than the other. Same idea here. Everybody loves liquor, but nobody ever thinks about the guy that's supplying it. I'm telling you, with the right recipe, we could be the richest people in the colony in no time.
If we ever figure out what happened to the colony.
Oscar flicked a switch on a beeping sensor, then tapped out a series of commands on a panel next to his acceleration controls.
You getting some weird readings from the surface?
Weird ticks on the sensors. Greer shrugged. Figure they need to be recalibrated. I'll put that on the ever-growing list for the petty officer to fix. He loves his lists.
An orange warning light flashed on the console in front of Lincoln, accompanied by a short drill alarm that made Greer jump. A notification panel appeared on Lincoln's display screen, identifying coordinates and range from the Valiant. What the hell?
Lincoln said, leaning forward, reading through the data pouring into his displays.
Not a tick. At all.
Greer pulled her feet off the console, following the pilot's lead, fingers working furiously on the terminal in front of her.
Significant spike in surface pressures, Greer said. Weird energy waveform. You ever see that before?
Lincoln tapped a command into his console.
Nope. I'm trying to raise the Pathfinder's team, but they're still dark.
Damn, those power levels are off the charts. Sensors picking something up in the eastern hemisphere, almost exactly where Carson and her team sat down.
What the hell did you do now, Carson?
Lincoln asked.
Whatever it is, it's lifting out of the gravity well pretty quick, Greer said.
She pointed at one of the displays.
Look, it's already broken through the stratosphere.
These numbers have to be off. Nothing that big can move that fast in Atmo.
Greer cocked her head to the side, looking at the data.
Well, it is. Matter of fact, we should be able to see... There, look!
The horizon of Negev stretched across space in front of them, its red hue bright against the blackness beyond. The pilots watched as a large disc-shaped craft with a large bulbous drive section on one end rose into the void. It seemed to hang in low orbit for several minutes before rotating in place. It shot away, its hull stretching into a long, blurred image before disappearing into the endless black. The two pilots sat there in silence for several moments, both staring at the empty space where the ship had just been. Lincoln felt his head shaking involuntarily as he processed what he'd seen.
That's not possible,
Lincoln said.
It looked like it warped out of here. Like it went faster than the speed of light. That can't happen.
Greer pulled up video and watched the moment the alien ship vanished on repeat.
It's not possible. But we just saw it happen, Greer said. And we recorded it happen, so it happened.
And I thought the crucibles were the only way to get from star to star.
Lincoln ran a hand through his hair.
Guess there's all sorts of surprises out here.
Getting a signal from the surface.
Greer activated a holo panel and Carson appeared on the forward screens.
Valiant, there's an alien craft heading... Nope, Greer shook her head. It's gone. Shot out of here like a bat out of hell. Didn't even say hello or shoot at us. It's gone,
Carson's brow furrowed.
I can't tell if that's good news or bad. Doesn't matter right now. I need you to sit down in the mountain. Then we need to get these colonists out of here.
You found them?
Lincoln activated an alert on the ship and began his pre-landing checks.
All that are left, Carson said. We'll send exact coordinates, but when you see the mountain with the screaming faces, you'll know you're in the right place.
Carson out! The holo faded away.
Screaming faces?
Greer looked at her co-pilot.
I really wish I'd brought some of that booze with me, Lincoln said. Could definite